Welcome back. You're listening to Grafit 94.9 and English Only with a Doctor. So we are on our final week before I take a little couple of weeks break after the holidays in January. And this is the final installment of our Christmas stories and music on English Only with a Doctor. So I'm very excited. I'm very excited for several reasons. I'm very excited because I'm really hoping this these last 3 weeks or 2 weeks, and now this next week, has lit a fire and piqued your curiosity, and for you to search out this Vinyl Cafe Christmas pack by Stuart MacLean. I know he's passed, and I know I'm not even sure where his royalties go, but it is something that I think should be incorporated into every home and Christmas tradition to anybody who has even minimal ability to understand the English language. They are phenomenal stories. He is a great storyteller. And he puts all of my storytelling efforts to shame as I dabble in writing short stories and of books and doing art and painting and being an artist and having other hats other than just a PhD. So as we are embarking into this final 22 minutes of storytelling, I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. I don't know how many listeners I have. Some of you might just have Grafit on your radio and you just listen systematically because that's what you have on your radio. But I do profoundly thank you for allowing me this opportunity to share my love for Canadian music with you and to share my little anecdotes that might be slightly longer than they should be. But I do appreciate it. I'm wishing you a phenomenal, wonderful Christmas day because this will be airing on the 25th. I hope that today brings you affluence, abundance, choice, love, friendship, amazing food, and fantastic health. On that note, we're going to go into the story called Christmas at the Turlingtons. Have you ever been invited to go to Christmas or a Christmas party or a Christmas dinner or kind of festive dinner at somebody else's house? Well, I have. In fact, I invite perfect strangers to my house for Christmas. I have no idea. I don't do this traditionally, but I have. It's not uncommon for it to happen to me. I even when 1 year at the Christmas market, I met a couple of Quebecois, and I decided to bring them home for Christmas and make sure that they had a really good traditional French Canadian meal for Christmas. It was crazy. On that note. We will share with Dave and Morley's adventures, recounted by Stuart MacLean in his fantastic voice.
No one in God's great creation gives themselves over to Christmas more than Morley's neighbor, Mary Turlington. To the season and the spirit behind it, to be sure, but not only to the season and the spirit, to the whole nine yards, to all the noise that surrounds Christmas. "I've chosen my Christmas color," Mary announced triumphantly to her husband, Bert, one night in July. "I'm doing cinnamon this year." Notice it's not we're doing cinnamon. For Mary Turlington, Christmas is a solo sport. "We'll need a copper tree," she said to Bert a few days later. And catch that shift, an important distinction. Mary writes the score, but Mary expects her husband, Bert, to be in the band. By right of marriage, Bert is enlisted, inducted, and suited up. Mary, who's taken up with and over by Christmas every year, became particularly focused on this Christmas some 6 weeks ago. Until 6 weeks ago, Mary believed that her mother and her sister and her sister's husband and their four children and her brother and his kids were all coming to her house for Christmas. But one by one, her family bailed. Her brother got a new job and couldn't afford the time away. Her sister's husband got sick. Her mother called and said, I don't know. If no one else is coming, maybe I should stay at home. Anyone else might have been disappointed. Anyone else so caught up in Christmas preparations might have fallen apart. What's the point, they might have asked. I work so darn hard, no one cares. Mary didn't fall apart. Mary dug deeper. Means we can do things my way for a change, she said to Bert. Apparently, Mary, who had been all about control, had also been all about compromise. I thought I was going to have to do a turkey again this year, said Mary. Emma's so conservative on the question of turkey. On the question of turkey at Christmas, Bert felt pretty conservative himself. But he was conservative enough not to admit it. Instead of being unsettled that her plans were unraveling, Mary was becoming unleashed. She was Mary unshackled. What do you think of Hannah? She said to Bert one night. Who? Said Bert. If we henna'd your hair, said Mary. Think of how nice you'd go with a copper tree. Mary had apparently shifted into some previously undiscovered Christmas gear. And Bert, who had always been delighted by his wife's Christmas cheer, was beginning to feel something that was not delight. It was a bigger feeling than delight. A worrying sort of feeling. Fear. Bert was fearful that Mary's Christmas was about to overtake him. He felt like the Cadillac in that song about the little Nash Rambler. Beep, beep, said Bert. What, said Mary? Oh, nothing, said Bert. As Christmas got closer, Mary set out their collection of Christmas candles. A parade of little paraffin men and women in chipped red and yellow choir robes. I know they're cheesy, she said, but I love these things more than anything. The candles had been in Mary's family since before she was born. Mary's parents had bought the choir master and his wife on their very first Christmas together. A man and a woman singing their little paraffin hearts out. Mary's mother had added to the candle collection each time she had a child. And when her children married, she added wax figures for each husband and wife, and then for each of the grandchildren. After 50 Christmases, there were now 23 candles that lived 11 months of the year wrapped in tissue at the bottom of a shoebox and spent the holiday season marching along the mantle, the two original candles at the head of the paraffin parade. Only one candle had ever been lit. When Mary's sister's husband left her for his aerobics instructor. Mary's mother burned his candle in the front window on Halloween. She scraped what remained of the candle off the window frame, wrapped the little wax puddle in beautiful gold foil, and mailed it to the ex-husband the following Christmas. Ever since then, the candles have assumed iconic status in the family. Every Christmas, Mary's mother picks up her candle and says, "Maybe when I die, you could light mine and put it on my coffin." We'll never light them, said Mary. Never, ever. Mary found a local welder to make her copper tree. He came to the house and measured their living room door early in December. I won't be able to use copper, he said. I'm going to use steel. But it'll be oxidized steel, so it'll be copper colored. It'll look he was searching for the right word. Dead, said Bert. That was the night when Mary told Bert she'd settled on scallops for Christmas dinner. I'm going to poach them in saffron, she said, so they'll look nice with a tree. And that was the moment that galvanized Bert. That was the moment Bert decided the time for action had come. Bert was standing in his driveway when lightning struck. Well, not literally lightning, but close to it. There was a flash and a loud clap, and Bert jumped back, his hands flying up to protect his head. And then, as he stood there, a giant set of fiberglass reindeer antlers fell out of the sky and planted themselves in the front lawn right beside him. Bert stared at the vibrating antlers, thinking how ironic it would have been, given his current situation, to have been taken out by a giant Christmas decoration. And then he looked up, and he spotted his neighbor, Dave, running down the sidewalk. Dave, with his face covered in soot and his eyebrows singed. "You'll never believe what just happened," said Dave. And it was suddenly obvious to Bert what had to happen. Mary needed to be distracted, or Christmas, as Bert knew and loved it, was going to be lost. And if Mary's family weren't going to show up and do the job, Bert needed someone else to take up the slack. Someone who rubbed up against his wife a bit, the way her sister did. Someone to preoccupy her. "Hey," said Bert. "Dave, how are you?" And that is why, 2 weeks later, at 2 o'clock on Christmas afternoon, Morley looked at her husband across the mess of their living room and said, "If we're going to get to the Turlingtons on time, we better start getting ready right now." Dave was standing by the couch in his pajamas, knee-deep in wrapping paper. He was holding Morley's present. It looked like it had been wrapped by a small animal with no opposable thumbs. "This is for you," he said, holding the package out. And he kicked his way across the room towards Morley as if it was an October afternoon and he was kicking his way through a leaf-strewn park. "I love you," he said. Sam, 12 years old, and crawling through the paper toward the back of the tree like a caver, stopped dead and looked over his shoulders at his parents and he said, "Will you two please stop talking like that in front of me? It's inappropriate." At 2 o'clock in the afternoon at Dave's house, Christmas was still in full swing. Two doors down the street, however, at Christmas Central, two doors down the street at the Turlingtons' house, there was very little evidence that Christmas had even happened. The Turlington twins had already taken their presents back to their rooms, and they'd put things away in their drawers and cupboards. And while Sam dove under another pile of paper as if he were snorkeling, the Turlington twins, dressed in their matching Christmas sweaters, were sitting at the dining room table writing out their thank you cards. 21-year-old Adam Turlington was sitting on the sofa, carefully folding wrapping paper and sorting it into two neatly labeled boxes, one marked recycle, the other marked reuse. Mary Turlington was vacuuming in a pair of gold kitten heel shoes. And soon these two different cultures were going to be brought under the same roof. Dave and Morley and Sam and Stephanie were heading up the Turlington's walk. And now, as they stood on the Turlington stoop, Morley turned and she took Dave's arm at the elbow and she said, "Best behavior." "Very best," said Dave, nodding earnestly. And he meant it. They were both thinking of other dinners at the Turlingtons, the competitive strain, the abrasive political discussions. Dave took a deep breath. "Very best," he said again. And then Dave reached out and he rang the Turlingtons' bell. Mary opened the door and stared at Dave, and there was an uncomfortable beat before anyone said anything. Mary in a long black evening gown, gold earrings, her hair a strangely artificial shade of orange, her hair sprayed and pulled tightly back into a bun. Mary standing there like she was expecting the queen and finding a man from the stables instead. Mary in her formal dress and Dave in his cords and a flannel shirt. If you could have seen inside of them, you could have watched both of their hearts sinking, both of them thinking, "How did I get myself into this?" And before either of them had time for a second thought, Dave saw Mary Turlington's Christmas tree for the first time. It had a steel trunk and steel branches and steel needles and steel decorations. And Dave, who had been expecting greenery when he glanced into the living room, blinked. To Dave, the tree looked rusty. Tree looked sharp, like some kind of giant, corroded medieval weapon. Or a bombed-out electrical tower left rotting in the fields of some war-torn country. Those are the thoughts that were tumbling through Dave's mind as he stood in the hall with his mouth hanging open. And the very first words that came out of his mouth were not, "Happy Christmas, Mary," or, "Mary, you look wonderful." The first words out of Dave's mouth were, "My God." What happened to your tree? Morley saw Mary's jaw twitch and thought she heard a faraway whoosh. It was the sound of an evening of merriment being sucked out of the house. Dave glanced helplessly at Morley. I'm trying, his expression seemed to say. Morley stared back. Try harder. And then Bert was ushering everyone into the living room, posing them around the rusting tree, chatting with forced cheeriness. He pulled out his new digital camera. "Everyone smile," said Bert, hopefully. And Dave did try harder. In an effort to show Mary that he appreciated her hospitality, Dave sunk his hand into a bowl of gourmet snack mix that was on the hall table. As soon as he popped the stuff into his mouth, he knew he had a problem. He glanced down at the bowl. There were dried cranberries in there and what looked like bits of cinnamon stick. But what he thought were tiny potato chips were now looking suspiciously like the stuff you might use at the bottom of a hamster cage. Dave's teeth grinded away at what he now realized were cedar shavings. And it dawned on him that he was eating Mary's Christmas potpourri. When he looked up to see if anyone had noticed, he saw Mary staring at him from the other side of the living room. So instead of spitting into his hand, which is what he wanted to do, Dave smiled gamely and swallowed. Bert handed Morley a glass of wine and reached for his camera. "Hold it there, Dave," said Bert. The more Dave tried, the worse things got. Just don't touch anything," whispered Morley, taking a clove-studded orange from Dave's hand. Everyone was in the kitchen, and everyone was busy. Morley was tossing the salad. Bert was taking pictures. Mary was dusting the turkey with cinnamon. "Well, what can I do?" whispered Dave to Morley. Just be helpful," said Morley. "Just look around for something that needs doing and just do it. Don't ask." Dave couldn't see anything that needed doing in the kitchen, so he went in the dining room. There were flower petals and little pieces of bronze-colored glitter all over the dining room table. Dave went to the hall closet and got the hand vac and hoovered them up. Then he picked up a pack of matches from the buffet and headed toward the mantle. One by one, he lit the wicks in the heads of the little wax choir. a few of the oldest figures burned remarkably fast. The little wax puddle at the top of their heads sunk into their skulls. So the flame of the candle shone through their eyes. It gave them a slightly demonic look. It would be more dramatic, thought Dave, if he dimmed the room lights. That way, the candles would be the first thing you saw when you came into the room. They were certainly the first thing that Mary saw when she came into the room. She was carrying a salmon appetizer. They managed to pick most of the salmon off the floor before the Turlington's dog got too much. Dave scooped up the biggest piece and wiped it off on a napkin. 5-second rule, he said, grinning. Hold it right there, said Bert, reaching for his camera. Somehow or other, they managed to get through the meal. After the candles and the salmon fiasco, Mary had headed back into the kitchen like an army general determined to overcome defeat in the field. Bert kept jumping up and blinding everyone with a flash of his camera at regular intervals, and Morley hung on to her wine glass like a drowning woman clutching a life preserver. In fact, by the time the turkey was finished, things seemed to have settled down so nicely that Dave felt it might just be safe to help out again. He headed into the kitchen to see about the plum pudding. You'll need more than that, said Dave, as he watched Mary douse the pudding with a shot glass of liquor. Now, whether or not she did need more is a moot point. Point is, if Mary had added just a little more, everything might have been all right. But she didn't. Mary wasn't about to let Dave tell her how things should be done in her kitchen. So instead of adding just a little more brandy, Mary looked at Dave icily and she said, "That'll be plenty." And Dave, moved by only the best of intentions, Dave, not wanting anything more to go wrong, waited until Mary wasn't looking and gave the pudding an extra shot of brandy anyway. And Mary, not wanting to be proved wrong about how much brandy you needed to light a plum pudding, waited until Dave wasn't looking and gave it 2 extra shots herself. So the pudding was well and truly soaked when Mary carried it to the table and struck a match. There was a whoosh and a bright blue flash, and the pudding went up like a Roman candle. A number of things caught fire. Most spectacularly, the cinnamon-colored silk ribbon that Mary had wrapped around the bun at the top of her head. The ribbon acted like a wick. And in an instant, blue flames were shooting out of Mary's heavily hairsprayed hair. She stood stock still there by the table, holding the match in front of her, looking like the Statue of Liberty on fire. Bert jumped for his camera. Unfortunately, it was Dave who put her out. He used a pitcher of eggnog. It was hours later, after Mary's hair had been put out and the dining room generally hosed down and the twins in bed and Dave and Morley safe at home, that Mary's sister Emma phoned. Mary took the portable phone into the den while Bert finished tidying in the kitchen. Emmy sent her love, said Mary when she returned. Her eyes were red. She'd obviously been crying. I guess I miss her, she said. I hadn't thought of her all day. I hadn't missed her at all, but, you know, I've never had a Christmas without her. Did you know that? Did you tell her about the candles, said Bert? And the pudding, said Mary, wiping her eyes on the sleeve of her plaid shirt. She reminded me of the Christmas the dog ate the turkey and the time Adam knocked the tree over. Remember that? Family and friends, said Bert. Family and friends, they sure mess up our lives. They sure do, said Mary. But she was smiling now. They sure do. Thank you very much.
I don't know what to say about that story. It just leaves warmness in my heart. So I don't know if you know what eggnog is. I don't like it. But my opinion is irrelevant. But it's a mixture of egg and milk and Christmas spices, and I think you can put rum in it. So when Mary had eggnog poured on her head, it would have been a very milky and crusty substance. Just as an FYI, if you're wondering what that is. I know my parents made it. My grandparents made it. It was, I don't know if it's a North American or an English Anglo-Saxon tradition. It's not something I enjoy. I don't really like egg and milk mixed together unless it's in an omelet, but unless it's cooked. But that is just not my vibe, and it's okay. I like champagne, so there we go. On this note, so in this first segment 2 weeks ago, we had the first song was by Stomping Tom. In the second segment, this first song was by Stomping Tom. And in this third segment, the first song is going to be by Stomping Tom. And in fact, the last song will be Stomping Tom Connors. So on Graphit 94.9 FM in English Only with a Doctor, as we finish or we close, yen clôture of this series of Christmas End Stories on Christmas Day for you, we have Christmas Angel by the fabulous, phenomenal, upbeat Stomping Tom.
No one in God's great...
I get you on my mind every year at Christmas time, as I trim every bough, branch, and limb. But I don't want to see an angel on the tree till you're back in my arms once again. Christmas angel, I have named you since the day we first trimmed a Christmas tree. And I called it my love, and I placed up above a little angel where I wanted you to be. And I get you on my mind every year at Christmas time, as I trim every bough, branch, and limb. But I don't want to see an angel on the tree till you're back in my arms once again. Christmas angel, I have named you for the Christmas tree I'm holding in my heart. And I'm leaving a spot for your love on the top, Christmas angel, even though we're far apart. I get you on my mind every year at Christmas time, as I trim every bough, branch, and limb. But I don't want to see an angel on the tree till you're back in my arms once again. I get you on my mind every year at Christmas time, as I trim every bough, branch, and limb. But I don't want to see an angel on the tree till you're back in my arms once again. Till you're back in my arms once again.
So I don't know about you, but Christmas always, for me, was there was a lot of driving. I would drive to my parents' house. I would drive to my aunt's house and all this stuff. So on the road, it can be quite treacherous. And in the Canadian context anyway, if you're not very careful, you could get seriously harmed or, you know, there's snow, there's ice, there's poor visibility and all of that stuff. And when one of the things that creates conflict in my heart of hearts is that when I would be in, when I was still in Canada and I was still married to my ex-husband, we would, because our parents and our grandparents all lived in the same area, we were obliged to see all of our parents during the Christmas holidays. So it was from one house to the next. So this was my schedule. On the 24th at 4 o'clock, we had to be at my dad's house for his Christmas dinner event, and we were there from four until 8:30. And he would make these phenomenal meatballs and gravy, and then there was this dip that his wife would make that was quite good. It was a spinach dip that she would make from scratch. It was really delicious. And then we would, at 8:30, we'd promptly leave and we would drive 40 minutes to my mother's house and we'd do Christmas Eve at her house. Now, Christmas Eve was a bit different than what some North American, Anglo-Saxon Christmas was. Christmas Eve was a huge event, and that was after Christmas Eve dinner, which was generally around midnight. We would open our presents. And then first thing in the morning, we'd go back at 7 o'clock in the morning to my father's house. And then at 9:30, we would leave and we would go to his mother's house. And then we would eat a copious meal, Ukrainian Christmas meal. It was crazy. There was 11 different kinds of meat or 11 different dishes. And then we would go to his grandmother's house and then we'd end at my grandma's house. It was a lot of driving, really compact, really, really quick. And so driving, the idea of driving, being in a car, is a part of the Christmas kind of tradition, because you bring your presents in, you bring your presents out, you bring your family in, you bring your family out, and it's part of it. And then you get to sit and enjoy the meal. But what's really fantastic about these events is that this sense of family and obligation, which is conflictual because it can be quite stressful. And on that note, or on that kind of same vibe, I have Jonathan Ray featuring Corey Hart, which we listened to last week, this song, Driving Home. So Jonathan Roy is kind of interesting because he used to be a professional hockey player. It's very different. And his father was a professional hockey player. So Patrick Roy was, Patrick Roy was a legendary hockey goalie, and he was a junior hockey league. Sorry, it wasn't a professional hockey. He was also a goalie. And this is their song. It's quite good. I really enjoy it.
Well, I can't wait to see those faces. I'm driving home for Christmas, yeah. Well, I'm moving down that line, and it's been so long, but I will be there. I sing this song, pass the time away, driving in my car, driving home for Christmas. It's gonna take some time, but I'll get there. Top to toe and tailbacks, oh, I got red lights on the run. Soon there'll be a freeway. So I sing for you, though you can't hear me. When I get through, I feel you near me. Driving in my car, driving home for Christmas, yeah. Oh, oh, yeah. Driving home for Christmas. driver next to me. He's just the same. Oh, just the same.
Driving Home for Christmas. I really liked that rendition. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was nice, the two different voices that came that were still as passionate. When I think about Corey Hart in my youth, he was a rocker, right? But he's got this folk vibe to him that I really do enjoy, and I'm a huge fan of folk music, as you probably already know. The next song on the list on Graph Hit 94.9 FM in English Only with a Doctor is The Bare Naked Ladies. So this is from a Sarah McLachlan album from 2015, and apparently this song is it's like a cover. It's God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen and We Three Kings, and it's a collaboration between Sarah McLachlan, who's a Canadian icon, and Bare Naked Ladies, who are also Canadian icons. And they kind of did this like a grassrootsy. They decided they were going to do it on a whim, and it was a one shot, one recording that they did it backstage during a radio event, which is really cool, in 1996. So I think this is really lovely. It's beautiful. I think that the voices, I think the male voice, I forget his name right now, but he's the lead singer of Bare Naked Ladies of the time. The lead singer has now changed. He went a separate way and he did something different. But he's just got this voice I can fall asleep to. I just think it's beautiful. So this is the Bare Naked Ladies with God and Sarah McLachlan. That's hard to say. With God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen.
God rest ye merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. Remember Christ our Savior was born upon this day, to save us all from Satan's power when we were gone astray. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy. God, our Heavenly Father, this blessed angel came, and unto certain shepherds brought tidings of the same, how that in Bethlehem was born the Son of God by name. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy. Star of night, star with royal beauty bright, westward leading, still proceeding, guide us to thy perfect light.
Born a king on Bethlehem's plain, gold I bring to crown.
I don't know why it turned off, but we're just going to enjoy it as it is. I just loved that they did this all just in one sitting. I just find that so amazing. I do sing a little bit, and I don't have real musical talent. I have real artistic talent. I can paint and I can draw and I can, you know, write stories and stuff like that. But music was just a passion that I was an onlooker and an observer and a participant, but never a true participant. And being able to just kind of ad lib like that and just know the music the way it needs to be known and how, and be able to express yourself that way, I just find that just fascinating. It's like quantum physics. It makes complete sense, even though it's chaotic. The next song on the list is by Jill Barber. So Jill Barber is a Canadian folk singer. She's from the East Coast in Nova Scotia, and she's just phenomenal. She's got this lovely voice that just resonates in your soul when you listen to her. And this song, she sings both in English and in French. And this song, of course, it's about Christmas, and it's sung in French, and C'est la nuit de Noël. So Jill Barber, if I have anything more, did I write anything up on here? Let's see. No, I have nothing on her. So I've seen her in concert. She is just a lovely, lovely woman. She is able to, she can belt it in a concert hall of 10,000 people without any problem at all. And she's just lovely. So this is C'est la nuit de Noël by Jill Barber on Graphite 94.9 FM in English only with the doctor. T'attends chez moi. That was just beautiful. I love her voice, man. It's just, I don't know. She's one of my favorite singers to sing and replicate. She just brings the joy in, I think, lyrical music out in like en masse, you know? So I forgot to say something really important at the beginning of my session. Merry Christmas, everybody. Merry effing Christmas. 2005 has led us to this point of generosity, perhaps some stress. I certainly don't have a job, so that's no stress. I do this for a volunteer, but I'm looking for work. And that's okay because life is how it is. It's cyclical and it's beautiful either way. I hope that your Christmas was full of snow and Christmas cheer and fantastic trees and laughter and amazing food. I probably already said this earlier, but just Merry Christmas. I forgot to say that. I forgot to say those words. Joyeux Noël, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy Hanukkah for those of you who celebrate different faiths, or Happy whatever you celebrate. Happy. This next song is Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas by two people. One of them is from, Benjamin Abraham. I think that's his name. I forget. And the other one is Little Miss Higgins. Now, I met Little Miss Higgins in the summer. She's such a cutie. She's cutie patootie. She's petite and tiny and has a big gray streak of one side of her hair. And she's got this voice that belts, and she does a lot of like bluegrassy kind of music that are very, really upbeat. And next year, apparently she's coming to France with a puppeteering company. And she's going to narrate and sing the puppet show, which is kind of fun. The puppets are fantastic. And there's apparently a puppeteering conference in Reims every year in the month of October. So hopefully, and she also, Little Miss Higgins, will be showcased on Graphite 94.9 FM in English Only with a Doctor in the new year. I'm starting to figure out those things on a series that I want to do that's called Dinner at 6, which will actually just be a 5 o'clock show, but or maybe it'll be a different one. We haven't figured that out yet. And the storyline for this kind of show idea that I have is that you invite a musician to talk about the food that they would serve, who they'd invite, and what music they would play during the dinner party. So this is something relating to her, and it is just fantastic. Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, a collaboration from an Australian artist and the Canadian Little Miss Higgins, and her real name is Jolene.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas, let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. From now on, our troubles will be miles away. Dear to us, gather near to us once more. Through the years we all will be together, if the fates allow. Hang a shining star upon the highest bough, and have yourself a merry little Christmas now.
golden days, happy golden days of yore. Faithful friends who are dear to us, gather near to us once more. Through the years we all will be together, if the fates allow. Hang a shining star upon the highest bough, and have yourself a merry little Christmas. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Have yourself a merry little Christmas.
Christmas, Missy.
Merry Christmas, Ben.
That was lovely. I think that was a perfect rendition of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. So the last two songs on the list, I wanted to end with a really hardcore rockabilly kind of thing with the Creep Show, and I'm hesitating between ending with that or ending with the first song that we did on this last 3 weeks series by Merry Christmas by Stomping Tom. So we're going to start with Stomping Tom and then we're going to end with the Creep Show. How does that sound as we end this 3 week session of stories, Christmas stories and Christmas music on Graph Hit 94.9 FM in English only with the doctors? I think that that's the best idea. We're going to do that with Stomping Tom first. And then The Creep Show and Merry Christmas, Baby. I wish you a phenomenal, fantastic, joyous, music-filled New Year's, a safe New Year's filled with affluence and wonder and adventure. I will see you somewhere near the midweek in January, as I'll be taking a couple of weeks off, and we will ring in the new year around the 15th.
Merry Christmas, everybody, and a Happy New Year, too. May your holidays be merry and every wish come true. May you always be remembered by those so dear to you. Merry Christmas, everybody, and Happy New Year all year through. Merry Christmas, everybody, and Happy New Year all year through. Well, there's old Grandpappy, and he sure looks happy with Granny just a-slapping her knees. There's old Aunt Mary with funny Uncle Harry, and they're trying to give the baby a squeeze. There's long-lost cousins, kitties by the dozens, and they're gonna stay the whole day long. Get together now, friends and neighbors, sing a happy holiday song. Merry Christmas, everybody, and a Happy New Year, too. May your holidays be merry and every wish come true. May you always be remembered by those so dear to you. Merry Christmas, everybody, and Happy New Year all year through. Merry Christmas, everybody, and Happy New Year all year through. Turkey's on the table now, and when you're feeling able, you can take another helping if you will. But soon as you eat it, I'm afraid you gotta beat it, 'cause you gotta give the chair to Brother Bill. And hey, Uncle Marty, it's an all-night party, and don't you pour the drinks too strong. Get together now, friends and neighbors, sing a happy holiday song. Merry Christmas, everybody, and a Happy New Year, too. May your holidays be merry and every wish come true. May you always be remembered by those so dear to you. Merry Christmas, everybody, and Happy New Year all year through. Merry Christmas, everybody, and Happy New Year all year through.